How to proceed?
Thank you for coming. And if you want to stick around and chat for a bit, the gallery is actually open until 6 o'clock. So no rush to look around if you need.
What?
Well, you're seven.
A bit. Yes, I'm gonna just lay here. We'll be here till 6.
So we have these lunches every Friday from 12 to 1:30 roughly. And let's see, next week,
we'll be lunch with about 2666, Robert Mittenfall and Joel Hewitt. Robert, yeah, that's next week. I've been doing a class for the Autonomous U on affect theory, Brian Massumi, Deleuze, Rancier.
Rancier, awesome.
Yeah, and they wrote a foreplay act, and I have some zines that are to be hung out in a clothesline outside. So.
Oh man, that promises right. To be fantastic. No, seriously.
And then also on the 19th, the Society is going to be coming in. They're a local Seattle-based poet-scientist, and they're going to be doing some dealings with time and talking about the limitations of time, and that'll be on the 19th from 2 to 5, roughly, and they're a lot of fun, and I encourage you to come back for that as well.
There's a lot of moans in this here.
What?
There's a lot of moans here.
Oh, moans? Where? Yes, there's, well, there's moat ones.
Yeah.
That's not moat.
I like the economy of a confessor or confession, I just couldn't figure out what the investigator across the confessor is doing their own things. Or the confessor changes of what has most recent pain on it. Because it forces me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is out of,
I'm just curious, like, where that was coming from and what kind of personal part was, what backstory is there for that?
Yeah.
I'm just getting confused with that whole economic terminology about the professor.
Yeah. I dare I say it's like a sort of vulgar Foucauldian. Set of questions and queries that I had with regard to as a poet, I'm interested in confessional, in what we take to be confession vis-a-vis what is obviously a much more complex subject with a much more complex notion of identity than I think, we might otherwise, that we could otherwise have, you know, there's been a lot of discussion of agency, identity, will, and so on and so forth, which is really fractured, these terms have fractured, in fact, identity and subjecthood. So, curious about the relationship between, in that piece, I'm especially interested in the medical industrial complex as a kind of backdrop, the doctor-patient, non-biologic role, and I mean, so it got me started and got me started.
So who's the investigator and the doctor?
Yeah, in that particular situation, yeah. And not the divine, I'm interested in sort of the mechanics of what we take to be confession under different contexts,
sure.
Right? So, I was doing investigations for the occultations book vis-a-vis interrogation. Which is, sort of hard detainee interrogator mechanics. So doing a lot of research there. But Occultations and Hospitality is two poetry books. Were actually part of one book until it became obvious that it was too big and not interesting enough to be that big. Like, you know, it had to be split apart. But they're really companion pieces. They're written at the same time. So
they're either confessing to relieve themselves or they're forced to confess.
Exactly.
So a confessor confesses in a
Interrogator, the role of the interrogator, investigator, manager-worker relation, which I take to have similarities, not to draw an absolute connection.
It's just a curious, like, confessor, but it's just a curious term for Twitter. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. Maybe I'm not getting it.
No, I think it's good. I'm trying to wrap my head around it, too. And I'm not sure it's the term that I would eventually settle on. This isn't like, this is an introduction for the book or something, but this is, it's a real essaying moment for me. Like, it's a real trying out of work and of research, and continue to be researching. So, but what I'm really interested in is, especially today, what prompted me to be interested to read it was not only because I was going to be reading from local quotations in hospitality, but and both the medical industrial complex and the military industrial complex both operate with, sort of the book are interested in commodifying the body in various ways. But also because, I wanted us to take some opportunity to think about manager-worker relationships as having similar sort of dialectical enmeshing going on and similar power dynamics. And when I say similar, I know it's really charged because I don't want to equate worker and manager with that's the implication. And thus to come as close to pure commodity as possible while retaining some exchange value, right? So in other words, what gets exchanged via the worker's body is whether or not, regardless of how obsolete the body becomes as a kind of, as a mechanical device, as a pusher and mover and so on and so forth. I'm interested both in the mechanics and also in what gets produced, the larger market of trading, the asset of the confession, trading work, right? Work as something that can't optimally isn't exhaustible, but is as close to pure commodity as possible. It can't be pure commodity because then it would be out and is entirely useless. It wouldn't be confession.
So, sort of repeat back at you, the confession, which is analogized to production in some sense, or a productive mechanism, produces a regularized identity form, which is a commodity, right? Right. Regularized identity.
Yeah, within that circumscribed environment. Yeah.
Okay. So, I think you're absolutely right that the medical industrial complex and the prison industrial complex and the military industrial complex are all interested in the body as a commodity form. What's curious to me is that I feel like the way things are going, everything is becoming more and more super fluid, and the commodity form that they're interested in is the body as not just a form of commodity, but all forms of commodity.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's one of the major reasons that the labor movement has almost entirely died out, and that the bosses, so to speak, are winning because they've eliminated the hierarchical structure for the most part. Power as well as resistance are both organized in network fashions at this point, and they've convinced everyone to produce the confession themselves. Like, the sort of vulgar mechanism of actually having a confessor or manager has been completely replaced by the continual internal reproduction of the commodity.
That was what I was implying when I was discussing the internalization of and thus the self-maintenance, as it were, of the commodity that is your body. And that
do you feel like this is tied up in the resistance of the state form of America's power, or is this like resistance on an economic level, or as you could say, a certain amount of individual agency separate from the necessary political resistance?
No. I wouldn't say
it's
separate. Yeah, I know. I'm a vulgar Marxist when it really comes down to it. And I mean, I was a little I was a little wary of reading this, not just because it's just have big thoughts, but also because I want to be able to ask each of us, like what jobs we actually do have. Because I think that's part of the story. I think there's ways to theorize, for instance, about this. You know, I think that there's definitely truth to the sort of decentralization of the making it, you know, the decentralization of regulation of the body commodity, and thus labor. You know, you talk about the census, right? He talks about how, you know, it's a lot easier to see the enemy. It used to be a lot easier to see the enemy.
Well, now we are.
Yeah, and so, right, I think that's right. But I think that's right in probably the way that you're subtly sort of claiming, which is that there's this really pernicious coercion, right? There's an invisible, there are a set of invisible structures that get in the way from, that partition us, that get in the way from, that get in the way of our ability to organizing, not just law, not just labor law. But that's one sort of more obvious
not
example.
Not necessarily in our organization, our ability to organize productively or optimistically.
Right, exactly. we're in a very deflated moment in terms of our labor. But I also think, you know, our labor is becoming more and more invisible to us. Right? Our obsolescence is so deeply internalized. I think there is definitely the other part of the story is the causal structure, which is very much connected to what you're saying, the causal structure of right to work legislation and the anti-labor movement picking up steam after 1954, getting us to a point where now, through a system of labor laws themselves being prohibitive of organizing, got us to a point now where there's such low density of representation in the working world that that our communal memory and our ability to have a vocabulary, an organizing vocabulary and an organizing ethos and an organizing mentality is very rare. You know, it's not a commonplace thing. It's rare enough to when I was organizing workers as a union organizer, when I was organizing academic laborers, the worst folks in the organizers were poets. They were the most difficult to, and especially the lefty poets, they're the most difficult to say to sit down and say, okay, to convince that they had value as laborers, that poetry is a valuable form of labor, right? And that's a commodity. And that teaching is, of course, a valuable commodity, a valuable labor. So it shocked the hell out of me how hard I had to work sitting down having one-on-one conversations or small meetings with poets, for example. And I was just, this isn't a fast generalization, but can try and convince you yourself, my friend, have worth. Here, you have value. Your work has value. Your labor has value. It was a real act of convincing. So there's you know, that's vexed me for a long time, and I think you know, part of it is the work, huh? Yeah. What about other artists?
I think it's probably a lot easier.
Other artists were other artists.
It's shocking to me that poets wouldn't have to be. I would attribute that to just being Muhammad or maybe something. Like it's a totally dead form.
Yeah, and you know, of course, I'm one person in various places, you know, not like obviously taking some statistical
survey. In the last 5 or so years, they've been trying to blend poetry with something else. And,
yeah.
And presenting poetry that was so useful as well. But some of the earth, rural stuff,
Portland, Philly.
Even Flood.
Yeah.
You know, putting poetry along with a search engine, blending it with something else to get a better result.
Yeah.
So that has more value to it, use value.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I take FLARF to be interested in taking it, developing the commodity status of visual art. I take that to be one of FLARF's main interests, is to have the commodity.
Which is the public. When you're talking about confessional, I was thinking that it's like, if you confess to yourself and it doesn't make the public, I don't see how that's commodity, unless you internalize the market. So that actually, I got to agree with Freeborn when he talks about the networking rules of the laws. There's no one causal thing with the law change. It's this internalization of the market and how we think about things and this network of divisions that have happened over time.
I totally agree with you, but all I'm saying is that the withdrawing of
that's really part of the process.
The withdrawing of union representation in whole sectors is you know, so you don't have, you know, thousands of folks who are educated, organized.
Well, that's actually the largest area.
Huh?
You know, basically that's what's been replaced.
Yeah, right.
If something that goes wrong, it's like that's the only thing that latent management is worried about.
Yeah, corporate ethics. External campaigns and internal.
So division of labor, so what's the else worried about?
Yeah, so who here, so maybe we can go down the line and say where you work and whether or not you're organized. Oh, quickly to answer your question, it was easier work, the hard question about the arts. I did have much easier time with visual artists, museum curators, organized folks in the Museum of Modern Art. We were on strike for months and months and months, and we won a great contract. Musicians were somehow a lot easier, but of course musicians were used to being in the music guild, so they had some experience.
Very easier to be heard as well.
Yeah, there's a visual, I think that's what you meant by material. I mean, there's substantial visibility as it were. I think writers also, you know, are used to working, they're used to working more alone by themselves.
Well, public union, is that what you're talking about?
No. I wasn't just now, but I would recommend that we try and put the light back into the National Writers Union. I think that's important. I think that it's important that we develop a National Writers Union. The NWU is a great organization that just has lost so many members that it is now in a suit to try and win back its health care for its members. And I think that for $90 a year, I think we'd do well to try and organizing each other. I'm very interested in poets organizing each other. Not just stick together just because we're poets, but just because we have very little representation. We often work jobs that are completely unrelated to our passions and outputs as poets, or we're professors, in which case, if we're lucky, we're in a represented workplace. If not, then we're adjuncts, visiting professors, full-time professors with no job security, you know, kind of just basically fucked. The National Writers Union is unionizing in our workplace. I would like to be able to see us do that. I mean, I also want to start. A poets coalition in which we dedicate a certain amount of hours for every five poems we write. We're going to organize one person. Into going to a labor institute, taking a class and organizing one-on-one, and or doing something along those lines to either educate self or to organize somebody else if you feel comfortable doing it, and to joining into unionizing in the workplace. And I feel like that's the kind of movement that we need to start. It needs to be grassroots, one-on-one, and it needs to happen. It needs to be a spreading activation. And I feel like we should commit now. No dues until we win the union election. That's the law, man.
So just
quickly, I know some of y'all want to go. What if you don't work, that's labor too. So don't be ashamed. You know. That's more work than work. Maybe we can go around. We can talk about what work you do and whether or not you have union representation, whether you've ever had union representation. How about that?
I work here.
Huh?
But I also work at the Henry Art Gallery. It's actually subsidized when I work here.
I'm unemployed right now. I never had in your presentation. I've never had union representation. But just real quick, do you know about Seattle Solidarity?
Mm-hmm.
Or okay, do you know about Holy Sol too?
What?
Holy Sol, Lesbian?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff with USAS too.
Yeah, were you involved with Holy Solidarity at all?
No.
Okay. Because they kind of died and they kind of need a little bit of help organizing. So that's something that's going on with you right now. But anyway, yeah.
I work as a teaching assistant at UW.
But at UW, teaching assistants are unionized.
I'm not.
What?
Age.
Really? Undergraduate. Okay. Yeah, it's a graduate. It's a graduate teaching assistant union, and you're undergraduate? Okay. Yeah, I helped organize that union years ago. Marginal. I was very marginal for like a week.
Student and gallery assistant here. I'm unionized.
You
should work on that.
Gallery.
I'm not covered by any. I worked at for developmentally disabled campus. They were unionized. Mm-hmm. Every other place I worked for was book related.
Yeah, not so much.
I work now somewhere where it would be impossible, almost impossible to unionize for them.
Yeah.
Everyone is such an individualist. Individualist is kind of a land of metrics and bullshit.
Yeah, your place would be tough, I would say.
I have worked at a UNS bookstore a long time ago, and Steelworkers, when I was really young.
Detroit.
Yeah.
Which bookstore? I come from Detroit, just really.
University of Michigan.
Yeah,
bookstore.
The Michigan?
That was a UNS bookstore.
There were Steelworkers?
Yeah, that was a different. The Steelworkers.
Oh.
I had paid dues, but that's a different much from the summers.
You guys are great.
Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully I'm going to see you next week.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I'd like to see you next week. Oh, no, tomorrow I'll probably see you at the reading at the Scalpio.
Yes.
Bye, guys. Thanks. So,
I work for a corporation, and you're not unionized, but I'm trying to meet them anyway, so.
Well, perfect time to unionize, then.
I think you'd get shut down like that.
Yeah, it's sort of poor thing. It's like an arts and crafts, very like cutesy like supply store, but they have all these sort of like who gets priority and hours placement based on how many times you change your availability.
Yeah, like I just changed my availability and my hours went down, and I asked them why, and they said, "Oh, well, you're back on the bottom of the totem pole," even though I've been there for 10 months.
So they literally have totem poles. It's crappy.
Uh-huh.
But,
if you do well in sales and you'll go back up. It's like, well, I've been there for 10 months.
That's awful.
It's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit.
I'm Will. I work with Henry as a guard. Not unionized, but I think that's sort of the way the workplace is. The people are sort of able to. It feels like they're almost like a bunch of little factions, especially when all the money got cut and we went everyone down to 80%. There was no unionization, but there was a bunch of little miniature strikes where it's like, well, we're only going to install 80% of the show then. I feel comfortable there. So,
surprisingly,
I haven't been in a union since I worked at a grocery store, and that union was kind of unbelievably hard to participate in. So,
which union was?
I can't even remember. I was 16 at the time, but it was sort of like you would have needed a car and drive an hour outside of King County, like over the pass to Yakima to like participate in meetings or something. Right? It was really insane.
May have been UFC. There's a couple of grocery stores that are really quite bureaucratic.
Borders Books is one of my jobs.
Yeah,
no union in sight there.
That was a union busting moment.
Yeah. And
down in history.
Independent Tutor. And I don't feel like I need to be a part of a union there.
Why is that?
Because it's going back to a trade kind of mentality. And
why do you think that?
Why do I think what?
That's going back to a trade mentality.
Well, being in I'm in Columbia City, and it's a kind of a microcosmic representation of the city lifestyle. I feel like there's space for everybody to operate because it's a one-on-one tutor gig that I provide.
I see.
I'm not advertising more than I need, and I'm not providing more than I have to provide, but I'm maximizing my.
I see. It's freelance work.
Exactly.
I got you.
So I think there's room for that.
Gotcha. I didn't hear that.
Oh,
for some reason, I totally disturbed the way that job is.
I'm a student employee, federal work study. I don't know. I think we should have a union, but I don't know what that would be like.
You would not be able to work for that. You stay in labor board in Washington.
Really?
Yep. He's a state employee.
No, because it's work through work study. So the National Labor Relations Board, which is mostly private sector, but they also do public sector with regard to work study.